for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station. Your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
You're listening to Critical Max with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. I'm Doug Gefeller. I'm going to be your host this afternoon since my partner Rick Franzi is still enjoying his well-earned vacation in Florida. One more day and then he's back to work. Well, this is our 24th broadcast, and in response to the positive feedback that we've received, we're now broadcasting on both Mondays and Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m. here on latalkradio.com. So be sure to listen in or download the shows that you may have missed by going to www.latalkradio.com/critical. Well, my partner Rick Franzi and I are business owners, just like many of you listening today, and we've been creating and facilitating CEO peer groups for 15 years here in Orange County under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. You can find out more about that at www.executiveforums.com. These forums are the opportunity for you to meet with like-minded business executives and to work on problems that are common to all businesses today. Well, last year, Rick wrote the definitive book on CEO peer groups with the same title as the radio show, Critical Mass, and I would highly recommend that you add it to your reading list. You can find the book on Amazon.com. Just put in Rick Franzi under author. That's R-I-C-F-R-A-N-Z-I, and it'll take you right to it. As for me, I'm a master certified coach by the International Coach Federation, immediate past president of the Orange County chapter, and you can learn more about our coaching practice and our executive forums on our website, www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. That's forbusiness.com. Well, each week we invite leading business leaders to join us on the air to discuss what's going on in their businesses. Much like our executive forums, our goal here is to learn best practices from leaders who are active in the trenches today facing the same issues that we're all dealing with. And today, our guest is John Robinson. He's president of Technical Arts, and John's going to talk about how his firm is adapting to the changing manufacturing environment and how he's expanding the niche for high-quality, low-volume machine parts. Well, Technical Arts was founded in 1970. John became president in 1986. And prior to that, he served in the U.S. Army under Norman Schwarzkopf. So, John, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm here. I'm here, Doug.
Great. Glad to have you with us. I couldn't be better.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome. Glad to have you, John. Why don't we start out by telling the audience a little bit about your path and how you came to Technical Arts?
Well, Doug, I started out my professional career as a professional career Army officer, and this was in the late 1970s, and just after Vietnam had wound down, and the Army and I kind of came to a philosophical parting of the ways. At the time I was serving in Alaska, commanding a paratroop company up there, and it became quickly apparent to me that the priorities for the Army at that particular time had less to do with training soldiers to stay alive in combat than they did with a lot of other priorities. And so I made the decision to get out of the Army, and I advised my family that I was going to do it. My dad had a small one-man machine shop at the time, and he said, John, while you're making up your mind, why don't you come join me, and we can spend some time together. So I got out of the Army and came to Technical Arts, and I immediately That doubled the size of the firm. We went from one man to two men, Dad and I. Then about 1986, Dad decided it was time to hang up his spurs, and he retired, and my wife and I bought him out. Now, at that time, we'd grown all the way to there was three of us. So in 86, my wife and I bought Dad out, and we then proceeded to grow the company, to probably about 35 people in 2002. 2002 or so, at which time my son joined the company, and he brought additional talent and additional energy, and we've now grown up. We're just a little bit under 50 people now.
Wow, that's amazing growth there, John. John, let me ask you this. How do you how did the Army, your Army experience, prepare you for leadership in business? Do you have any comments on that?
Well, yes, there's a couple of things. One of the things, and this harkens back to Norman Schwarzkopf. There was one thing that he was really, really critical about. One of the things that he held up to us as very important was to always be taking care of your troops. And that meant doing a lot of things, going the extra mile for the soldier and making sure that you could take care of him. It also was attention to detail. And those two things kind of carried over into my professional life of technical arts in terms of, number one, technical arts is a really nice place to work if you're one of the guys out on the shop floor. We take care of our people. We treat them like family. And I ask them to take care of me, and I take care of them. The other side of that equation is the attention to detail. I'm sorry, Doug.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
The attention to detail, and that, for us, being in the machine shop, or I prefer to call it, in the machine shop business, details is where the devil is in that. There's always constantly a jillion really small details that have to be constantly considered, maintained, and observed. And it boils down to, if you're going to put out a quality product, you have to be paying attention to what's going on. And that was something I learned in the Army.
Well, that's great. You know, I often wonder, people ask the question, are they really prepared when they leave the service to enter into business? And it's refreshing to hear that the same kind of leadership principles apply. So thanks for sharing that with us. John, tell us a little bit about what does technical arts really do?
Oh, now you've got a subject that's near and dear to my heart, Doug. there was a time when I would have said technical arts was a machine shop, and I would not phrase the question or phrase the answer quite that way now. Now I would say we're more of a contract manufacturer. While our core business still revolves around machining things, whether it be metal, plastics, castings, forgings, the business itself is more of a manufacturing business. We have grown largely in directions of value added. For example, we no longer just machine parts. We machine parts and assemble them into sub-assemblies. Sometimes we produce the complete part, down to including putting it into the packaging that the final customer receives the part in. In a couple of occasions, we've even been shipping point. In other words, we build the part, put it on our shelf, our customer advises us of a delivery address, and we ship to the end user under our customer's name. Completely transparent to the end user. They think it's being delivered to them from whoever they ordered the part from, when in fact we're the ones shipping it. We specialize in optical systems. That's where our core business was. And optical, not as in eyeglasses and that kind of thing, but optical is in lasers, interferometers, microscopes, optical instruments. And we've grown beyond that. We're now heavily into the dispensing industry. We do a lot of things for the oil well industry, and we do some things for circuit board manufacturing companies.
You know, I get a sense of what you mean now when you say you've gone from being a machine shop into being a true manufacturer, and that's a big step. Was that difficult to change the culture in the company to do that?
You're absolutely right. It did require a change in the corporate culture. We had to stop thinking in terms of discrete parts, but thinking more in terms of a product. And it was less a problem than you might have thought, because our people are very dedicated, and our people do put the company welfare is high on their list. You know, we take, like I said earlier, we take care of them, they take care of us. And it has worked well for us so far. We find that the customers really appreciate the value added, and they appreciate also the fact that we are willing to go the extra mile to take responsibilities that are not traditionally part of the, I'm going to put this in quotes, the machine shop. We take on much more responsibility for the product than the traditional machine shop does. It's been fun.
Great.
It really has.
Yeah, well, you know, and I've had the opportunity to visit your facility and get toured around, and I know you're extremely passionate about what you do. And, you know, we talked about what kind of lessons you've learned that might apply to other businesses. And do you want to share some of those business lessons that you've picked up? I mean, you mentioned already a little bit about things you picked up from your Army experience, but you'd also talk to me a little bit about quality and about emphasis on the people making the parts.
Oh, yes, yes. I learned early on that quality is the single most important aspect of what we do in our business. And from that perspective, if you think of it like this, it doesn't matter how much I charge you for the part or when if I deliver the part early for you. If the product is not right, if we didn't make it to your specifications so it performs as to what you need done, you really don't care. You're not a happy camper. So quality is the most important thing. And to do that, you cannot inspect quality into a part. And you cannot afford in this day and age to make a bunch of parts and then just pick out the good ones. You have to be, in order to be successful in this day and age and to survive, you have to be making good parts right along. And a long time ago at Technical Arts, we adopted the false philosophy that the responsibility for making good parts rests with the guy that's actually running the machine. He needs to know, and he should know at all times, is this a good part that I just made or is it not? And so we've pushed the responsibility for quality down. It's not the shop foreman's job. It's not the quality manager's job. It's not the shift leader's job. It's the guy actually running the part. He has responsibility for the quality of the part he's making. And he also has complete authority to shout and say, hey, stop. We're not making good parts. We have to fix it. And if he's not happy, the machine's not running. And it's as simple as that. We've discovered that our reject rate and the level of quality we can produce went up dramatically. And our guys take great pride in the quality of the parts they do produce. And we have a very, very stellar reputation for quality.
Great, great, John. Well, tell me.
I'm sorry, Doug. I seem to have lost you there. At Technical Arts, one of the things that you and I talked about earlier was what type of customers does Technical Arts attract and who do we see as our core market? And right now, for us, our typical customer is someone who is probably looking for parts in a quantity range of less than 100. Maybe more, but typically it's 100 pieces or less. They're looking for a high-quality part. In other words, they aren't looking for a house that's just going to junk their parts out. They're looking for a house that's going to produce good parts. And
okay.
They're typically a high-tech. High-tech meaning that the industry that they're involved in is evolving rapidly. Usually it's involving electronics, laser devices, those kinds of things. And they have very high cosmetic standards for their parts. The part not only does it need to perform well in a demanding environment, but it has to look really nice also. It's not unusual for our machines and the assemblies that we do to end up in a laboratory being handled by somebody in a relatively high research capacity or in a a very visible production role.
Okay. What, John, can you give me some ideas? What are the typical products that you've made? What would be some examples?
Okay, well, we it's going to sound like we're all things, all people, but we do kind of cover the waterfront a little bit. Like I mentioned earlier, our core business has historically been optical stuff, or stuff that's related to optics. And again, lasers, interferometers, the large optical catalog houses that where you can call up and you can buy lens holders, mirror mounts, prism holders, those kinds of things. We do an awful lot of business with those people. We also do, we've made prototypes for the eye surgery machines. Most recent generation of the LASIK-type eye surgery machines, we did the prototypes for those. We do a lot of work for the dispensing industry, and it's amazing. I've been fascinated by the dispensing industry in that they are into almost everything. And when you look at the world around you, almost everything you touch has to be dispensed in one way or another. From the glue that holds the binding on your books, to the glue that holds the kitchen cabinets together in your house, to the ink that's on the page on the newspaper that you read. All of that stuff at some point or another had to be dispensed, and it's getting even ever more critical, the dispensing that happens. So there's a huge market there for us, and we've enjoyed tremendous growth in that area.
That's great. You know, I was noticing on your website that you made some mention also of being very conscious of going green. You want to mention that a little bit? What are you doing in that area?
Oh, yes, and I have to give credit for this to my son. He pushed me a little bit in this direction, and it's turned out to work well for us. He did a little bit of a study, and he discovered that the vast majority of the trips we make, and historically we used a pickup truck to deliver products and make pickups, but he discovered that the vast majority of them, you didn't need a pickup truck. What we were delivering, you know, was small enough and light enough that you could fit it in almost a subcompact vehicle. So when we bought a Honda Fit, and we use that now for most of our trips to customers and vendors picking up and delivering things. The other big thing that's made a difference for us has been we offer our vendors, our customers, and our employees the opportunity, if they have electronic devices that they have ready to dispose of that they no longer need, if they give them to us, we will dispose of them for them at no cost to them and dispose of them properly. We've also, the industry has for many, many years, there's been a lot of emphasis on recycling the material. We produce a huge volume of chips, you know, the metal that is excess to when you cut apart, you have a lot of chips left over. We recycle up well over 90% of the material that we make into chips on our shop floor. And even those materials where it's not commercially viable, we're not gaining any income from recycling them, we pay to have them recycled. An example on that is steel. Years ago, the chip guys would buy steel chips from you. Well, they don't anymore. Now you almost have to pay them to take the steel away because the value of the steel is so low in that term. Did I cover that one for you, Doug?
Yeah, you did. That's good. You know, the other question I'd like to ask you, I know your son Matt is involved in the business. I mean, that makes you now three generations into the firm. How has that impacted you, having your son come in?
Oh, well, it has given me a longer view. It has made me conscious of the fact that I need technical arts not only to take care of me and my family, but also to be in position to take care of him and his family into the future. But he also, he brings something to the business that I didn't have. You know, since he can remember, he's been involved at Technical Arts. I mean, when he was just a really little guy, I mean, 3 or 4 years old, he, on days when he couldn't be with his mother for whatever reason, he'd come to work with me. And so he literally grew up in the machine shop. And so he sees things that I don't see. I mean, things that are second nature to him and he's conscious of and that are just almost intuitive for me. And it has been a great pleasure to me in my life to watch my son kind of be able to show his old man a few tricks. he is, to be absolutely honest with you, he's smarter than I am, and he's faster than I am. And I think having machine shop oil in his blood has given him an edge over me.
Well said. I guess we can all use a little tune-up by the next generation coming up. You know, one of the things that fascinated me, John, as we toured your facility is your philosophy on the kind of equipment that you buy and the money that you're willing to spend on it. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, sure. Well, first, I have to tell you, we are very proud of our shop and the equipment that we have. Early on, I learned that there are several different levels in terms of the quality of the equipment you can buy. You can buy machines that are okay, and they will last for a little while, or you can buy a machine with kind of the long-term view in mind that you're going to need this machine to produce a quality part for an extended period of time. And we made that decision a long time ago. We committed to buying the highest quality machine we could buy, which for us has turned out to be the Morosiki line of machine tools. And it's more than just the fact that the machine lasts a long time. I expect my guys, the guys on the shop floor, to make quality parts. In fact, I demand it of them. And they need to have the best quality tool to produce the best quality parts that I want them to be making, that they want to be making. They need the best quality tools to produce them. And we've discovered that it pays off not only in terms of the fact that the machine will retain its value for a much longer period of time, but the guys on the shop floor are not spending near as much time fighting problems that deal with the reliability of the machine or the machine's ability to hold a tolerance. So we pay a premium. We pay more than you could buy a comparable machine for. There are certainly much cheaper machines out there, but they don't last nearly as long. And the guys spend a lot more time fighting issues with them.
You know, which seems to tie back to your kind of two main themes that you've given us here. One is your concern for the quality and in buying a more expensive piece of equipment with a greater tolerance ability certainly feeds into the quality issue. And then your concern about the environment that your workers have, giving them the best machines that make it the easiest to work with, seems to tie right back into that. So it sounds like you're well integrated in your practical day-to-day decisions into meeting your basic values that you have as a company. That's amazing.
Well, thank you, Doug. I appreciate that. It is, and pardon me if I slip into Army vernacular here for a minute, but the troops on the shop floor, they do recognize when you're trying to take care of them and when you're making decisions that have their frustration level, you know, in mind. And it pays dividends for us, and it goes back to the training I got in the Army of take care of the troops. So.
John, tell me a little bit about the competition. What is it like out there in this environment? You know, you're not the biggest shop, you're not the smallest shop. You've certainly been around a long time. How do you deal with competition?
Oh goodness, that's a moving freight train, Doug, and. It's definitely that question If you ask me, you know, you take a picture today and you get one view. You take a picture tomorrow, the view is different. And the freight train is constantly moving. Right now, the competition is fierce. I'd even say cutthroat. You know, right now there are an awful lot of shops chasing not a lot of work. And in order to survive today, you have to be able to know what your costs are. I mean, know what it actually is going to cost you to produce a given product, and then be able to actually produce it at that price, and then produce a quality part or quality product and deliver it in the time frame that you promised that you would deliver it in. And that is getting to be a taller and taller order. Lead times are shrinking. Lot sizes are shrinking, and quality demands, the expectation on the part of the customer as to what kind of tolerances they expect you to hold are constantly shrinking also. The tolerances are getting ever smaller. And I have to come back to, again, it's the troops. The people on the shop floor are the ones that make us successful. You know, I'm not making the parts anymore. I'm not making the product. I'm not doing the assembly. I'm not packaging it. It's the man on the shop floor actually doing the work has to be dedicated, committed, and recognize that what he's doing is important and that he is contributing to the overall future and his own future and the future of the company. I think I went around the block to answer your question there, though, Doug.
No, I don't think you did. I think that was well put, John. It leads us right into the next question, though, and tell me a little bit about your view of manufacturing as a viable business here in Orange County. You know, I hear so much and read so much in the papers about manufacturing's dead in Orange County. You can't afford the labor. You can't afford the rent. And yet, you know, here you are. And you're not the only one, and we keep running into more and more, Rick and I, as we're out there, more and more manufacturing companies out there. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what do you see for the future of manufacturing in Orange County?
Oh, I think manufacturing in Orange County is very viable. But we have to change how we look at it and what we expect the market to look like. It's not going to be the market we had 20 years ago. 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago. It's changing, and it's changing ever with ever greater speed. The days of large quantity contracts, those are gone. A large quantity contract is not, you know, it's not going to happen in this part of the world. What we're going to have to do to be manufacturers in Orange County is we have to be concentrating in a kind of a niche, and the niche that I see that exists is going to be relatively small quantities. It's going to be products or services that are not easily transported outside of here, something that geographic considerations play a large role. So that might mean that you have a product that requires a lot of coordination. You have a product that requires a quick turnaround. And you have a product that, for whatever reason, your customer doesn't want to see it being moved overseas. And let's face it, the Chinese are labor costs. You know, we have a labor cost here that they just simply don't have. So we need to be able to find ways where the fact that we are here, located in Southern California, adds value, and there's a lot of things that come into that equation, but we just have to be prepared to change what we think is our customers' deep desires and needs, and what our customers are going to look like.
You know, it encourages me to hear you say that. You know, for a firm that's been around since the 70s to be sitting here today and saying, hey, if we're going to continue, we have to constantly change and reevaluate, but there's still a market. That's really encouraging, and I think it speaks well for you. It speaks well for your son, Matt, and for the people you have working for you, John. So that's great. You know, as we kind of wrap up here, before we end, is there anything else about you or your organization that we haven't talked about that you want to mention?
Well, yes, there is, as a matter of fact. I mentioned earlier that there was a time when you asked me, well, what is technical arts? I would have said it's a machine shop. And that over time, my answer to that question has changed to where now we're more of what I would call a contract manufacturer. And I'd like to say to your audience that if you need manufacturing done, please, we're very much interested in doing that. We're trying to change with the times. We're trying to be culturally relevant. We're trying to be economically relevant. And we're trying to be relevant from a standpoint of you need a product and we need work. So that's, and I hope that makes us a valuable asset to another company. You know, we see our role not necessarily as being a vendor, but we like to be considered part of our customer's team and part of the team of getting their product to the market successfully for them.
You know, I hear a little bit of that military background in there. It's all about teamwork, and it's all about looking at the end results, not looking about individual efforts. And, you know, that has served you well, John. So, you know, how does someone get in touch with you? I know you have a website, which is www.technicalarts.com. You're located...
.net, Doug.
.net.
.net. Yeah. There's a very nice lady in Texas who owns the technicalarts.com site, and you'll contact her instead of me. You need to be talking technicalarts.net.
Well, thank you for correcting me.
Oh, it's certainly in my own best interest there, Doug. She usually forwards email to us, and we send her flowers once a year. So that's kind of a thank you. But if you want to reach me, www.technicalarts.net. And there's a whole list of web addresses and email addresses and things there, and you can kind of get a look at what our company looks like from the website.
Very good. I apologize for that blunder, and thank you for catching it. And, John, thanks for a very informative look at manufacturing in Orange County. I'm looking forward to seeing you and Matt August 3rd at our annual executive conference. And, again, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate having you on the show.
Oh, it's been my extreme pleasure, Doug. Thank you very much for inviting us to come on, and I look forward to seeing you and Rick in the future. And thank you again for the opportunity to talk about the work of my life here, technical arts. Anybody there?
Okay, we're back here. John, I assume you're no longer with us? Okay, great.
I'm still here.
Okay, John. Here. Well, I'm sorry I lost you the connection there for a minute. I just wanted to say thank you, and, you know, that's great, and you can sign off now. I appreciate you being here today.
Okay, I'm done. Doug, thank you again, and good luck with your next guest.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye. Well, you know, there's. I need to update you on a couple of great opportunities here. Actually, if you were holding on there, waiting for Phil Adams, he's not with us today. There was an emergency that came up, and he had to attend to it, so he won't be joining us. We do have two great opportunities that I want to update you on. First, every year, Rick and I sponsor a half-day conference to honor our radio show guests and our Renaissance Executive Forum members and their guests. And this year, we're honored to have Dr. Coley and Mr. Navarro speaking at our 2009 Executive Conference. That's going to be next Monday, August 3rd. Each of those gentlemen are going to bring a powerful message to our members and invited guests about two timely and critical topics, branding and social media. You know, I don't know about your situation, but both of these topics are becoming more and more critical to Rick and I as we expand our business. The branding issue is one that we've been kicking around a lot lately and are still struggling with since we offer our services, like many of you, under multiple names. We have the Renaissance Executive Forums for our executive forums. The coaching perspective is part of our coaching practice that we offer for individuals and corporate group coaching. The Power of CEO Peer Groups, Critical Mass, the book, Critical Mass, the radio show, and now Critical Mass for Business. We're currently working on consolidating all of this under one website at www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. But we're anxious to hear what Dr. K has to say about all of this. And as for social media, between multiple websites and blogs, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, iTunes podcasting, you know, we're extremely busy, but the question always remains, are we being effective? So we're really anxious to hear Damian Navarro talk about social media and really how to use it in an effective way. Damian is co-founder of Earthbound Media Group, a strategic marketing agency. A strategic marketing agency specializing on the in interactive and technology-driven solutions that impact an organization on an enterprise level. EMG was an Inc. 5000 firm in 2008, actually number 811. It's been selected as the third fastest-growing private firm in Orange County by the Orange County Business Journal. Been selected as one of the best companies to work for in Orange County by Orange County Metro Business. So EMG's viral marketing on YouTube enabled Kofax VRS ads to exceed 1 million hits. Now, that's certainly credentials. So he's going to be our speaker. If you want to learn more about him beforehand, it's www.earthboundmediagroup.com. Earthboundmediagroup.com. Dr. K holds a PhD in marketing from Indiana University. He specializes in brand and corporate identity. And as a professor of marketing at California State University Fullerton, he is a double recipient of the Business School's Best Professor Award. His research has been reported in academic journals and newspapers, including the Business Horizons, the European Journal of Marketing, Harvard Business Review, Los Angeles Times, and the Orange County Register. National Public Radio has also done a segment on his work. And he has done consulting for such major companies as Autodesk, Canon USA, KFC, Lucent Technologies, Odedex, Regency Healthcare, Taco Bell, and Verizon. So just to give you an idea, those are two very high-quality, very high-profile speakers talking about branding and about social media. So to make your reservations for that, please send an email to Rick Franzi. That's R Franzi, R-F. R-A-N-Z-I at executiveforums.com. Like I say, the meeting will be next Monday, August 3rd at the Center Club from 7:30 to, we'll have you out of there by noon. You know, there's a second great opportunity also coming up this in the next 2 weeks. I've been involved in professional coaching world for the last 12 years. I've been a master coach, certified coach by the International Coach Federation for 10 of those years. And if you have any interest in knowing more about the coaching profession, I would strongly urge you to consider attending the August 13th meeting of the Orange County chapter at the Irvine Marriott Hotel. This is an evening of live, masterful coaching demonstrations. It's one of the most popular events of the year, and seasoned coaches, new coaches, individuals, and businesses interested in hiring or training coaches will find this evening to be extremely educational and informative. For the past 3 years, the ICF Orange County chapter has invited leading accredited coach training schools to offer the community an opportunity to observe what transformational results can happen in a coaching session with a master coach. Let me tell you what that looks like, because really, in the 12 years I've been involved in coaching, there is no other place where you can see this happen. It is an opportunity to look at coaches that have been trained by the top schools in the country, give demonstrations with clients showing you the differences in their coaching styles and the impact that has on the outcome. It's not that one is better than the other, but for different circumstances, different styles seem to work better. So if you're thinking of being a coach or if you're thinking of hiring a coach, either as a business or personally, this is a sort of a once-a-year opportunity to really learn about it. It's the opportunity to observe the power of coaching when combined with the ICF core competencies. So we're going to divide the evening into business coaching and life coaching demonstrations, and you get a rare opportunity to get a glimpse of this high-level coaching. So don't miss this opportunity. Again, it's August 13th at the Irvine Marriott Hotel. You can get more information and make your reservations by going online to the ICF Orange County website. That's www.icforangecounty.com. So those are the great opportunities that are really available to you in the next couple of weeks. And we have wonderful guests on the show, but every once in a while we run across something going on in the community that we feel we just have to make you aware of. Tomorrow, Tuesday, 4 o'clock, we've got a great show again. Two wonderful guests, Gloria Robbins, founder and CEO of Specialized Marketing Services, and Ari Supran, Chief Operating Officer. Oh, I didn't say that right. Chief Operating Officer of Sonnets. You don't want to miss hearing these two. So don't miss it. And, you know, we've enjoyed having you here for our 24th session of Critical Mass, the radio show. Thank you. Have a great evening. Be talking to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller.